7BR Part Heard.
Hello, and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape examining issues across multiple practice areas guided by the diverse expertise of our members. I'm Rhys Palmer, Chambers Paralegal. We're joined today by 7BR member Richard Baker and Linda Reynolds of Hugh James Solicitors for Part 2 of our Inquest series. If you missed Part 1 to the series, you can find this on Chambers' website, where Rose Harvey Sullivan introduced us to the book and discussed mental health and mental capacity in an inquest context. Richard has co-edited the book, and Linda is one of the co-authors, alongside 8 other members of 7BR and other leading inquest solicitors. Richard is a specialist in inquest law and is regularly instructed in complicated cases involving breaches of human rights and the interpretation of the jurisprudence of the European Court. He was an assistant coroner in South Yorkshire between 2011 and 2016, and now undertakes judicial reviews in relation to decisions by coroners and general medical matters. He has recently represented families in a number of inquests arising from poor maternity care and has extensive experience of cases involving the care provided to vulnerable and detained patients in the NHS and the wider community. Linda is the head of the inquest team at Hugh James Solicitors. She has considerable experience in assisting families with inquests that relate to deaths in hospitals or care homes where medical negligence is expected. She's been instructing on Article 2 inquests, inquests with juries, and complicated medical inquests where numerous experts have been instructed. Richard, Linda, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Rhys.
Hi, Rhys.
So we're here today to talk about the book that you've co-authored, Coroner's Investigations and Inquests. What inspired you to contribute to this book?
Well, inquests obviously are my area of expertise and the area of law that I practice in, predominantly in medical negligence-related inquests. Of course, when I was asked to contribute by 7 Bedford Row, I was honoured and said so immediately that I would be happy to.
And Richard?
When we were putting the book together, and I think the listeners will have heard Rose talking about this in the last podcast, we were trying to put together a book that not only set out the legal framework, but which also provided practical and pragmatic advice to practitioners in an accessible way, and also something that could be read or provided to witnesses or people involved in the inquest process. So we were really pleased when lots of contributors from not just out Chambers, but outside of Chambers were able to come in. And we were delighted to have Linda providing her input.
Well, you both have extensive expertise in this particular area. Why are you interested in it?
I like the aspect of representing families at inquests because I think there's a sort of natural underdog tendency to representing families against, you know, big institutions that seem to have all the resources behind them. But more importantly, I think you get a real sense with families that you're helping them find the truth. And an inquest is all about finding the truth and finding out what happened and providing them with answers, often answers to questions that no other forum would be able to provide them with. So it's a very, very unique area of law and a unique court.
Linda?
For me, I really enjoy the sort of contact that you have with families. For most civil cases, you don't necessarily spend that long with families. When there is an inquest, you're often sat in court together for days on end, spending time in families' rooms, really understanding who someone was before they died, and then how the family need to deal with the inquest that looks into their death. Some of them are extremely traumatic. Some families you get to know really well over a period of a year or two throughout the inquest process, and you would just normally not have that opportunity to spend so much time with the client. So I really do enjoy actually the time with them.
And so you talk about spending time with the client. In practical terms, what are you doing with your clients, with the families?
From my point of view, I think I probably have one role with almost two hats. I have a legal obligation. Obviously, I'm instructed by a client and I have to prepare for the inquest and any civil claim to the best of my abilities from a legal point of view. But I also need to take my cues from the family. So I need to understand them and understand how much information they need, when they need it, and how they want the proceedings to progress. Some families want an extensive investigation. They want answers. They want public accountability. Others just really want the process over as quick as possible and want you to get to the end of a process that they haven't chosen to go down often. An inquest is something that is mandated by law in certain circumstances, and not all families can deal with sitting in court for days on end, and particularly can't deal with sitting in court for days on end without any representation in alien circumstances with alien language that they don't understand. And my role is to see where they're coming from and help them through that journey.
I think that's a really important point that Linda raises there, because one of the things that we try to focus on in the chapter is getting across to people that when you're representing a family at an inquest, no two families are the same. There isn't a universal truth that covers all the families. You know, some families find inquests to be a cathartic experience, that they obtain some healing from seeing people cross-examined or finding the truth, and others find it traumatizing and dehumanizing. And we saw that from looking at the report into the Hillsborough inquest and people's experiences through that. So I think anybody who's representing people at an inquest, representing families in particular at an inquest, has to make sure that they understand what the family wants and manage their expectations about what the inquest can achieve.
Well, you talk about managing families' expectations and providing that client care. Now, there must be quite a few issues that crop up that the families don't understand that are particularly legal. Could you provide some examples as to what these might be and how you deal with them and manage those clients' expectations in those circumstances?
Yeah, so the sort of thing we will all say to families at the start of an inquest is to remember this isn't a trial. It looks a lot like a trial. You have people in a witness box being examined, and you have someone who's sitting in a judicial role at the front. But actually, it's an inquiry into an unnatural death. And it's a process by which the court investigates that death and tries to find the answers to very specific questions, such as who the deceased was, when they died, where they died, and how they died. And in some types of inquest, in what circumstances they died. But for the most part, it's focused on answering those questions. It's not a trial in the sense that somebody puts a case and then a court has to determine which side it accepts. And because families see it as being a bit like a trial, they often think that it can achieve the same outcomes of trial. And it doesn't always. Sometimes it delivers a critical conclusion at the end, which answers their questions and provides the justice that they're after. But for lots of people, it's just a process by which evidence is given, information is imparted, and by which a court concludes on specific facts. So if you don't manage their expectations and say, this may not deliver what you want, then you can find families can be disappointed by the process.
From my point of view, I think it's important as part of the continuity of client care that from the first moment you're instructed and you talk to someone, that you explain that there is no hard and fast rules and there's no set course of an inquest, that it generally grows and moves according to the evidence, and you have to keep explaining often what you're doing there. As I said, I have two hats on, almost the legal and the sort of personal client care hat, and it's about moving them through those and not bombarding them with legal stuff to start with and introducing that slowly. Often families are grieving and they really don't understand the process at all, and information has to be repeated many times, and you have to manage how they are, what they've heard, and what they retain of that information as you move through the process. And it is a cathartic process for them, but can also be very emotional. And it's about managing how they're going to feel before, during, and after. And I do remember clients saying to me, when we first contacted you, you said this, this, and this, and you were right, and we didn't think you were at the time as to what the process was going to feel like, particularly how difficult it is after the inquest, that no matter what the outcome, actually, it is incredibly emotionally difficult, and they are going to feel drained for quite a long period afterwards and don't want to immediately jump into a civil claim. They need time to process how distressing that is, no matter how well they felt that they've been represented or have handled their emotions during that process.
I think you've just touched on it a bit here, Linda, but you speak about the cathartic process of an inquest versus more of the adversarial side that a civil claim would be. Do you think that this is an important process that we should be developing further to allow these families or individuals to come to some sort of resolution without the need for very complex and expensive and lengthy litigation and civil claims?
Most clinical negligence claims never reach trial. The numbers are very small. And an inquest is generally the only opportunity the family will have to ask questions, see witnesses, and understand the evidence. And it is important for many of them to understand that and go through that process. The worst thing that can happen to a family is that they're not represented, they don't feel part of the process, they don't get the answers, and they don't understand at the end what happened, how it happened, and why it happened. And actually, having representation is the most important thing for a family, to feel like they've had their voice heard. Because once the inquest has completed, going back and opening it again and going through those processes again is incredibly complex and long. And I think families often don't understand the importance of representation to start with.
Well, I think it's a cathartic process if it's done well. And if an inquest doesn't go well, or a family don't feel they have a voice in it, it can actually be a very damaging process for them. And history is littered with sort of numerous examples of what happens when an inquest is handled badly and the impact it has on people who are very vulnerable. I mean, the grieving families we represent are very vulnerable people at times, and, you know, need to have exposure to an inquest in a way that isn't re-traumatizing. And so that's quite a difficult side to what Linda and I have to do when representing families, is just to make sure not only are we managing expectations, not only are we ensuring that questions are asked and answers are obtained, but just also managing and listening to them through the process to make sure that they're coping with it. And, you know, the idea for both of us that families would be attending inquests unrepresented, where there would be a sort of barrage of lawyers on the other side for various interested parties. I say the other side, it's not strictly the other side, but that other people would be represented is horrifying, because the idea of a family in their grief trying to navigate through something as complicated as an inquest is quite worrying.
And is this something that practitioners can find in the book, where you speak of making sure that inquests go ahead properly and processes are followed accordingly?
Yeah, so the purpose of the chapter Linda and I wrote together was really just to condense into one place the specifics of representing a family at an inquest. And, you know, a lot of the texts that we've seen are sort of fairly dry legal books which set out the law and practicalities of certain aspects of evidence, but they don't deal with the practicalities of representing a family. And so what we tried to do was just put in one place some of the experiences, some of the things that can be done to help manage a family through an inquest. I mean, for example, you know, the managing of photographic evidence, you know, the managing of post-mortem evidence, you know, which can be a very difficult experience for family members. Having to see a pathologist give evidence, or read the pathologist's evidence, or see photographs or videos of their loved one can be a traumatizing experience, and it has to be managed properly. And it's their choice. It will always be their choice about what they see and experience at an inquest. But you have to prepare people for what's going to happen at an inquest.
And you talk about preparing. I think, Linda, this is something that might be unique to you. I understand that you were previously a nurse, and you might have that knowledge and background that might be useful when explaining specific things to the families.
Yes, I used to be a qualified nurse in intensive care. I think that probably gives me two skills. One is an understanding of the medicine, and the ability to explain the medicine to lay people. So I've spent many, many hours before now at a bedside explaining two families what was happening and what medical interventions were going on and how the body was responding, and the ability to pick up from a family what they do understand and what they don't, explain it in traumatic circumstances, I think is a great help when helping with families. So clearly that experience of just seeing people in distress at difficult times in their life gives me a good grounding for how I can deal with clients now. I've seen people at their worst moments of their lives and had to explain information and understand their distress and still get on and do my job at that time. And I think probably both those skills assist me now in the role that I have now, helping families through inquests.
Richard, from your perspective, what experience have you had in inquests that you feel have helped you?
Obviously, I've had a lot of professional experience of inquests. I've been instructed to represent families in a lot of cases, but I had some personal experience when I was younger. Somebody I knew who was killed in an accident, and the inquest into her death, I thought wasn't handled in the best way, and had lots of features of it that you can see in the Hillsborough cases, the Marchioness case, the way that if an inquest is handled badly, it can have the impact of traumatising family members, re-traumatising family members and making their grief worse. And I saw the impact that it had on people that I knew, and that motivated me and has always motivated me in my career to push for the idea that people should be properly represented at inquests, and also that inquests should have at their heart the bereaved people and the deceased person.
One of the skills I also think is important in a solicitor is matching the barrister with the family. And I really do try to get a good understanding of counsel, how they behave, what their personalities are, and how well they're going to fit with different families. And I think that experience of having a wide range of counsel that I use and have a contact with really does help with family representation, because families are looking for different things often, and it is the nuances of people's personalities, what they're looking for, and an understanding of where they're coming from that actually helps make the process the easiest it can be for a family. It's never going to be an easy process, but hopefully the knowledge and experience that comes with doing this job means that you can do a better and better job the longer the time goes on. And at 7BR, there are a lot of barristers that are very experienced at inquests. And having met a lot of them, I do feel that I know where their passions lie and which families they will fit with as a good team.
Thank you, Richard and Linda, for joining us today. The book is available online as of today, and it's available for a hard copy purchase on the 22nd of March. Where can our listeners find the book?
Well, thank you, Rhys. There should be a link available alongside the podcast to take anybody who's interested in obtaining the book to where it's available. But we're all very excited. A lot of really hard work's gone into it, and it's been a joint effort. Lots and lots of people who've contributed to it, and we're all very proud of it.
Thank you to our listeners. We hope you enjoyed part two of our inquest series. If you haven't yet, you can listen to part one, where Rose Harvey Sullivan talks about mental health and mental capacity in an inquest context. You can now find the podcast available on Spotify, Apple Music, SoundCloud, and Chambers websites. Join us next week for part three of the inquest series. Until then, thank you and goodbye.